and the longing for the sight of the radiant form of the Master within yourself. This longing and yearning for the sight is the bond or the unity of the spirit. That very feeling, that very same experience which we all have separated ourselves from the very start of time, when man came out from pure beingness down into consciousness. As he descended away from beingness and coming down into consciousness, his hunger became stronger. Then the hunger shifted into various desires. The hunger shifted to different types of experiences in the electrical realm. It shifted into the intellectual realm, craving to remind itself what the unity of the beingness was. Then man designed and tried to ensure his intellectual nourishment by creating books, literature, in the process of trying to describe to himself what he thinks this unity of beingness meant to him. As he strayed away more and more from beingness, down into that intellectual realm, into that astral realm, he found it was insufficient . He could not reach back for his pure beingness because it became difficult for him to be ethical. Therefore, he started drifting down now into his physical realm, where tactile sensation and the nourishment of the physical body became now the paramount drive for spirituality or survival. Here, the soul is entrapped by the senses and loses its power. Here, the soul depends upon the physical senses to provide for its physical survival. In the physical realm, all the appetites are accelerated. Sight, smell, taste, touch. There is absolutely no control in the physical realm. And because the control has been lifted, the senses begin to degenerate and tear down the spiritual man, tear down the spiritual nature. And the spiritual man begins to find himself drowning in his senses, He's clutching at a straw now. He's clutching at sensations to remind him of his being, that he is spirit. That he has a spiritual nature. The more he clutches at the experience of the senses to remind himself that he has a spiritual nature, the further away he is from that experience. Because his mind or his consciousness begins to develop excuses. It begins to develop different types of ideational patterns to seal him off from his true being. Now, as he approaches that critical moment of physical breakdown called death, he becomes afraid, and the terror of dissolution, the terror of loss, of identity of beingness begins to creep in. He's confronted with the five senses, the very same five senses that drew him away from his true nature. They are now starting to betray him. They're starting to run away from him. They're becoming unreliable, and sooner or later they're losing their ability to give him an experience of a spiritual contact. The sight begins to waver, the smell begins to diminish, the taste is lost, the odor is smell is going away, touch, and finally hearing, the last sensation within the mechanism is going away. Man is now at the borderline of the spiritual realm. He's in conflict as to where to go as soon as he takes the last breath. At that critical moment, all the life patterns and desires, the unfinished ones, start coming to the surface of the memory, passing before the objective mind. And he begins to see the unfinished record of his life. He begins to see the various cravings. He begins to see into another realm where these cravings have left electrical entities hanging in the atmosphere. Then silently he begins to hear a drum beat, like a drum is beating. And the poet once said, every man marches to his own drum beat. That is, the rhythm of the sound current in your body, your own rhythm to which you have aligned yourself to the sound current, is starting to vibrate within you now, at that critical moment of departure from the five senses into the spiritual realm. The sound current starts to speed up. Now, if you're not an initiate, the sound current begins to take the form of the Lord of Creation or the Lord of Karma. And he stands on your left side, a radiant form, presenting you a full scroll of your misuse or proper use of that audible life current in that one incarnation, and the unfinished karma of previous incarnations. During those moments, we can go through now tremendous thought patterns, nightmares, and horror of the passing over from the physical realm into the electrical realm. If we are not initiates, then we are born into that electrical realm by the aid of the Lord of Karma, who performs the severing of the cord and takes us now. He is the doctor on the spiritual realm that must perform the severing of the cord and take us now to that spiritual home to which we are assigned to work out our karma. Just as much as a doctor on this side of the realm severs the cord, assigns you to your own physical parent, where you work out your physical karma. Equally true on the astral realm, the Lord of creation, or the Lord of karma, severs the silver cord and assigns you to your spiritual home there to work out until you're ready to reincarnate. Now, if you're an initiate, the radiant form of the Master Consciousness is on the right side. And if you're familiar with that Master by human contact in some form, his face becomes pronounced, his eyes become piercing. It becomes very discerning. And to your amazement, you will find that there is a light attached from his big toe, his right foot, to your body. He assumes the responsibility and takes over the account from the Lord of Karma for your behavior in the incarnation, and sponsors with his vital forces your redemption or your paying off of the misuse of those forces, or the good use of it. He will see to it, like a sponsor to a bank, where you have no credit. It's the bank of life which you have used up. The Master will now present with his audible life force, which he has lived through very ethically without polluting it. He is above reproach. Lord of Karma has no hold on him. He now assigns his love and grace and his discipline upon your soul nature. And he performs the severing now of the cord. He is your spiritual doctor, and then assigns you now to your own spiritual home. There you will come into a home of initiate family to work out that karma. Now, if you have made great strides and he's compassionate enough and you are humble enough, he can free you of the physical birth and leave you in the astral realm to carry on your incarnation in the astral realm, in some spiritual realm of the astral world. Then at a later date, as you work out that astral depth, he may then take you onto the causal realm and assign you to a causal family or a causal initiate family to work it out, and then take you back home to Satchkan, the supercausal realm. Now, if you are fortunate to accept the grace and grow, we can take you way up to Satchkan and give you a view of Satchkan, and then bring you back to that particular realm in which you must work out the unfinished karma by His grace. And thereby you may have an incarnation where you would not have a loss of memory of the experience. You will come in a human form, carrying glimpses of those verities or truths of your nature. And possible in a home of the initiates who may be more lenient, more open-minded, more spiritual-minded towards such tendencies of past life experiences that would give you the chance now to catch up and grow into that complete awareness of yourself in one incarnation. Then the soul really yearns for its true nourishment, which is peace. As it lives in the initiate life, the life becomes one of constant peace, constant inner quietude, a constant certitude of the luminous wisdom that emanates from within oneself, that transcends every obstacle of craving to impress one's superiority over another. The growth in the final phases of a spiritual person is one of empty-headedness, one of an absence of all conscious memory association, freeing that soul from conscious memory association and immersing it in the beingness of its nature. It lives in the ecstasy of joy and the joy of fear, tears of joy. Every breath is a tearful joy of supreme ecstasy beyond all description. It's like bursting at every cell and yet not bursting, bubbling and yet not bubbling. You're like champagne in a bottle, sealed up, not spilling over or wasting away, but you're still bubbling inside, vitalizing. Because there are no verbalization in your mind no more. There are no language in truth. It is all essential feeling, essential oneness of feeling, the essential texturizing of your senses, in which sight, smell, taste, touch are all integrated in the texture of things as they are. And in the final stages of a spiritual life, your knowingness is your oneness, and your oneness is your peace that passes all understanding. You become a butterfly, a distinct new creature apart from a caterpillar. The spiritual metamorphosis that occurs within you is one of supreme peace. The radiance is always there, the feeling is always there, and when you merge with other people, they begin to be lifted up by that peace. Their soul nature is nourished now by your peace, by your presence. You become the spiritual prasad of human contact for other souls. Your whole being would be like Jesus said, "This is my body, this is my blood. Do this in remembrance of me." You are the true nourishment, just as much you are the true ransom for all humanity. The spiritual man does not have to perform miracles. The highest miracle he can have is the transformation of his physical body, his electrical body, his causal body, by pure ethical living. When accomplished, it changes the very vibratory rate of the environment in which it lives, that others are nourished by it. It is the art of living and dying daily by ethical behavior. It is spirituality in action. Therefore, to bring this about on a practical level with the five senses and intuition and the use of the will, it has been found that seva is the most ideal form of experiencing God realization. Love is God in action. Seva is devotional action dedicated to the wholeness of God and the oneness of yourself. You have now a dynamic process of spirituality which you can feel on a tangible basis, in a very simple way of being attuned with the Spirit. Not a complicated process, a very simple approach, a very practical approach. Love in action, through service, through devotional action, outward and inward. If a master says to you, meekly wait and murmur not, or don't grumble, if you were to perform this devotional attitude right throughout your entire life, you will be suddenly crowned with the highest possible vision and highest blessings that the soul can ever experience. Because you would automatically become the Master Consciousness. You have lived out one desire of the true Master Consciousness in one incarnation. You have become a living Bible. The Bible is not something we read merely to entertain the mind. It is a form of behavior recorded by which the human body can transform its crude, base, carnal nature into an immortal, dignified, respectable mechanism emanating the fragrance of the rose, the purity of Castile soap, and the luminosity of a diamond. You see how becomes possible to live a spiritual life in a very simple, practical way. Accept where you are, what you are, and merely perform action with a devotional attitude. For all action is God. For all action is the love which God gives us to perform. The only thing we can deny God is love. He can take back everything from us, every emotion. We can still deny him love. Yet if we are able to generate the love through action, we have the highest experience possible in consciousness. And the soul is beingness, it's not consciousness. There's a big difference between beingness and consciousness. You can intellectualize as to what God is, but beingness is an experience of feeling. And it's that feeling of oneness, that feeling of bliss, that feeling of joy, that evanewness of yourself, that immensity of your whole nature. Is the fitting into your body for the first time. Do anyone know what that feeling is? Fitting into the body? As if your body belongs to you for the first time now? Those who have been through image therapy can vouch for what is fitting into the body. Fitting into the body is integration. It's the homogeneous unity of yourself. It may seem very simple, very insignificant, but it's very far-reaching in the spiritual realm and its value and your own trust in it. That trust is meant by Jesus when he said, "Blessed are they that believe and have not seen." You are blessed to have had the experience of fitting in to your body completely. Sitting in the presence of any master, and you will feel that. And when you can trigger it off yourself within your own nature, you know now that you're blessed, that you are there. You are free, free man or Lord of yourself. Masters do not perform miracles. They merely live in the trust of that integrated nature. And by the trust, they are endowed by the gift of the Christ intelligence in them to crystallize desires around themselves. Therefore, they do not attract you to God by miracles, unless there's some karmic bond for your upliftment. They would crystallize that particular situation. But there is no individual who has ever entered on spiritual path that can claim he has never seen a miracle. The moment he enters the spiritual path, he will see miracles. They're all around. A million miracles are happening. 100 million miracles are happening every minute. Good. A day. So you see, once you begin to recognize what a miracle is, with or without the presence of the Master, it's happening. it is the trust that you have to develop. Master's consciousness is all around. And don't get carried away with the concept, my master is better than your master, or my pup is better than your pup. The master consciousness is your highest nature within you, the audible life current. How sweet the sound of what? Om, the audible life current. This master's voice. Om is the audible life current, which is God, and it's the vibratory expression of God, which is God's voice. When you use the word master, we are only inferring to its supremacy. If we identify with a form, then the form would be that particular aspect or facet of it. But if we sing the chant differently, we will see something now that makes it more universal. How sweet the sound of Om, this master's voices we hear. In all prevailing silence, they whisper, we are here. It's the universality of all realized men, including your own realization when you come into it, that you are the audible life current too, and it's your song force. You would be the voice. And there is no love greater than the master's love. Not now the one individual, but the combined master's love makes up the one cosmic master's love, God. It's the combined expressions, the combined forms of these realized men make up the one. A flower is not a petal, and no one petal is a flower. A flower is a composition of many petals, yet which petal smells more sweet than the other? You split them apart and smell them. Is one petal sweeter than the other? It's not. Yet, they all draw fragrance from the one stem. Equally true, all masters, meaning all expressions of creation that are here, you, I, and everyone has gone on or to come, are in the process of giving off this fragrance. Now, the fragrance of a flower is not perceived when it's closed up like a bud, doing nothing. It's best perceived or experienced when the bud is opened up and blooming, doing some action. Then there is fragrance. Do we see now why seva or devotional service is the highest expression of God? Because there the fragrance is, there the living experience is. So, in the initiate's life, the highest spirituality is the tangible experience of living moment to moment, not the illusionary spirituality that one craves to be in some remote region possessing all the knowledge of the world in mathematical detail and not knowing what to do with it. And not knowing if he's more confused or she's more confused with it. Yet if you can live moment to moment immersed in the joyous action of devotional service, feeling the radiant presence around you in all activity, and you're getting through life by the skin of your nose, and you're making it by photo finish, and it's very hair-raising and razor-like when you walk that way, then you are on the spiritual path. The spiritual path is not a path of agony and tribulation. It is a delicate ballerina dance on a razor. It's the art of doing a pirouette on a razor blade. That's what the spiritual life is. If you can do a pirouette on a razor blade, you're pretty good. That's why they said the path of the masters is like the razor's edge. Truth is one, the paths are many. It's like a big wheel. There are many spokes. These are the paths. Each end of the spoke is anchored into the rim and the hub. One end is anchored into the rim, one end is anchored into the hub, and it makes the wheel. The spoke is that particular path you accept, or particular connection you accept. The rim is birth and death. The hub is your ideal or your destination. But you know, a wheel is absolutely useless without an axle. Yet the axle is not part of the wheel, and yet the axle is necessary for the wheel. They may be made of the same substance, but there is no way that the axle is going to be connected to the wheel. The only way that wheel can be of any service by contact with that axle is little grease. And that grease is called love. Otherwise, there's friction and heat. And it'll grind up and it'll stick and it won't turn. So love makes the world go around. Let's sing our anthem.
Balance, but the way I see it is one that I know of is a negative, which is balanced at that point, but then the other aspects of it, either one, there's a single difference in balance.
That's not correct.
Pardon?
That's correct. Well, it's correct.
Well, yeah, but all right, it's correct. It's totally neutral.
Well, naturally, God is neutral. He's no respect of persons, but unto the Son is given the power. Yes.
The whole bundle, you know, in Daniel 5, where somehow getting used to this life, are neutral.
Yes.
Taken in turn.
Yes.
Where God is neutral and there's five little pieces.
But he's not an it.
Well, I don't like that either, but, you know.
Yes, God is neutral. He's neither positive nor negative.
Yeah,
that was actually me. Yeah.
So what happens when you're mad? Is it chuck one and then it's the same balance?
No.
You gain one?
You enter the supercausal.
And leave everybody.
Right.
Okay.
You see, you have the physical body, the astral or electrical body, the causal body, then the polarized bodies of either side, and then you have the supercausal body, Sat Purush, the eternal body.
In other words, there is, at this particular point in my development, I'm not meant to be neutral. I am neutral, but I don't know it, therefore I manifest as being...
Aha! Now you're waking up. All of us are neutral. All of us are androgynous, bisexual. But because of the desire to experiment with the different charges of the body, we may become masculine or feminine. Right. Now, the only time you return to your polarity or your androgynous state is when you're sound asleep. In that state, you do not know if you're a man or a woman when you're sound asleep. It is a form of conscious shutdown and release, thus freeing you from the dualities of your being. And you do not know if you're male or female. And if you are dreaming as a male, you will keep dreaming as a male. But have you ever dreamt yourself as a female? Having a female body moving in your dream?
Not me.
That's the Beatrice of Dante, is the same thing. Dante had his Beatrice. Every mystic has his beloved, meaning his higher self. Omar Khayyam puts it another way. He said, I made a brave carouse. I divorced all barren reason and took the daughter of wine for spouse. He made a brave carouse, a brave decision or contract or commitment or involvement. He divorced old barren reason and took the daughter of wine, the spouse. Do you understand? Good. Well, let's hear what you think it is. Go ahead, try and explain it. C-A-R-O-U-S-E. You go carousing in a corral.
Maybe you had an obsolete meeting. All right, that could be two things. Either literally, you don't want to dare, picking up the deal while having fun, or else you have another thing. I have to look up.
Yes, yeah, you divorced. He divorced all barren reason. K-A-H-Y-A-M. Now you discover a new name for him. If we break him down, we will come across the God in man as the I Am. The I Amness in man makes a great decision to separate its association, that means the divorce, or sever its association with all barren reason, that is the logical relationship of the five senses that produce no results of an inward feeling. And wine is spirit because it's in the bottle of the human body. And the daughter of wine is intuition, that subtle force within the human body that transcends reason. So the I Amness in man no longer relies on the five senses to guide it with logical deductions and reasoning, because these tend to produce conflicts after a long methodical process, but suddenly now can transcend by the unity of intuition and merge into that ecstatic union. That's what a marriage is, intuitively. We can only know directly, cosmically, by intuition. We cannot know directly, cosmically, by our five senses and logic. They are limited and they are barren. That means they are not reproductive enough to give us the satisfaction. Our five senses do not give us the satisfaction of the extrasensory realm. Only intuition can do that for us. Intuition is that ability to know independent of the senses. So the daughter of wine, since wine means spirit,
to be spiritual, you must be united in the spirit. He who would love the Lord must worship him in spirit. And if you're going to worship the Lord in spirit, you would have to be on an extrasensory level, an intuitive level. And the only function in the human mechanism that tends to transcend the five senses and give you a glimpse of the spirit would be the daughter of the spirit. That's intuition. So intuition is a feminine force. It's a subtle force. It's the most pronounced force in the female body and the least developed in the male body. Reason and logic is very developed in the male body, but the least developed in the female body. Now the I amness, or Omar Khayyam, that is the I amness within the human body, cannot, if it's male or female, really align itself with the spirit if it would rely solely on logic and reason. It must now come to grips with the reality of its true existence by merging and aligning itself with the intuitive nature. Now, God does not perceive, or cosmic consciousness is not perceptible or perceived by the five senses or by logic. There is no way that we can perceive God awareness by reason or logic, because it's within the range of the senses. We can only perceive God awareness outside of the senses, which is extrasensory and is intuitive. That's why God is not known by thinking. He's known by feeling. The scripture says, "Be thou still and know that I am God." It did not say, "Be thou still and think that I am God." No arrangement or opportunity of thinking out the logical conclusion of God by the human mind is going to give us any satisfaction when God is being. Beingness is God, not a person. It is your beingness. Talking of it in the procreative act, can you think sex and produce a human being?
No, what I'm saying is it's a
verb. So knowing again, when we come back to it from the standpoint of a sexual experience, is still a involvement of feeling and touch. It's a biological contact. It's not an intellectual contact. So even when our friend Cain left his home in Eden after killing Abel and went down to the land of Nod, N-O-D, they said he knew his wife. Now, the common parlance is that you know your wife, meaning you've had intercourse with your wife. But knowing her, is that intellectual association? And the land of Nod, the word Nod alone tells you, you got to go to bed. You see, your Bible is so peculiar, it hides its meanings in words, that we never really question the words themselves into their true understanding to see what we're saying to ourselves.
And Cain don't really mean that there was a man, simply mean Cain, he being the third party after four individuals living in this planet. One die, three exist, one take off and go find himself a wife by sleeping. Your second chapter of your book of the scriptures tells you, and the Lord God placed to the east in the Garden of Eden, east of where? East of what? East of when? East of how? It is said that the Lord God of creation placed it to the east, the garden, the planet Earth. There is no mention of any planet, let alone on the continent of, on this earth that we live on. It is an allegory of a very deep spiritual involvement of the soul. The existence of the soul and its mechanics is the human body, a miniature universe, and the Lord God is beingness. That true I am self, the Soham. That is the first stage down from Satchkan. The Lord of creation, the I am self. I am that I am. But behind that, you gotta go beyond that to pure being, Satpurush. Now, to the east, in the human body, the top of the head is north. The base of the spine is south. The point between the eyebrow is the east, and the back of the head is west. That's why this point has often been called in certain writings the star of the east, or the third eye, or the pranic star, or Bindu or Trikuti, or the door. If you don't come through by the door or by any other means, you're a thief. Go look it up. That means if you use LSD and don't go through the door and find God through this point here, you are like a thief. Now, many people who have tried using LSD in the presence of a master found out that they didn't go through the door and they had an experience that they wouldn't want to have again. The master didn't condone them or chastise them. He just pulled out the energy from them to show them that they don't have no energy. We only fool ourselves. This is the east. Adam, the word Adam, A-D-A-M. What is a dam? Something that holds back. A retaining force. Now, what is the most retaining force in the human being, male or female? Against any idea that comes along, what you call that retaining force? Your reason. You want to reasonably, logically analyze why you should do something, why you should not do it. Adam in the human body is reason. Eve in the human body, male or female, is feeling. Feeling. So reason and feeling in a human mechanism is Adam and Eve. Now the subtle forces that are locked up in the spine are triggered by the desire. You call it the serpent. Now you don't have a serpent, you know. It's serpent because it's coiled up. That means that's the only way they can describe it. Kundal or Kundalini, Mother Kundalini, means coiled up or spring-like. Here we get the word now, potential force. The potential force is coiled up or held in check in the base of the spine by desire. And it's triggered by desire. Now you have two trees in the Garden of Eden, a tree of life and a tree of knowledge of good and evil. That means you have two types of brains. A real brain, which monitors life directly, that's the tree of life brain, and a pseudo brain, which gives you the feeling that it can monitor and have understanding of life. And that's your solar plexus. Now the name solar plexus has never changed from the dawn of creation. Now you know your solar plexus is on top of your tongue. Oh, you put it in the middle of the belly. Didn't everybody say the tree was in the midst of the garden? Why everybody putting their head in the middle of the tummy for? And he said, if you eat from that tree, the fruit, you will have a knowledge of good and evil and you'll never die. You see how desire tricks feeling to succumb to experiment with the solar plexus in astral projection. Because this portion of the body, solar plexus, which is a pseudo brain, not the real brain, will give you a knowledge of good and evil, solar, universe, all that ticks out there and direct your life. You will have a complete knowledge of the astrological movements of the universe, and you will never have to worry about good or evil or worry about dying. But it'll never give you a knowledge of life over death. The solar system and its functions cannot give you a knowledge of life over death. Of life over death. Astrology cannot tell you how to live in such a way that you'll be a master of life over death. It'll tell you what days are good. It'll tell you what days are bad. It's a knowledge of good and evil. It'll tell you what to watch out for, how to protect yourself. And especially astral projection. That means now for the first time the pair saw themselves naked. Pair of what? Man or woman? Naked? They were born and created naked already? When God created the first pair of people, male and female, created them, did he put clothes on them? The first time you have astral projection, the pair of forces within you, which is Adam, or reason, Eve, which is feeling, the positive and negative polarity of this mechanism, is devoid of the enclosure of the physical flesh. So you see yourself outside of yourself. And anyone who has had that experience will see a naked astral body. You'll never see an astral body closed. But you're never self-conscious to look at your body when you're outside of your body. That's the reason why you never see you have clothes on, or you have it missing, until you become self-conscious. The moment you become self-conscious in an astral projection, you'll notice that you're nude. And if you are prudish or suffering from some kind of a mental block, you'll try to look for a fig leaf or something to cover yourself. That's why they told the Lord, we are nude, we're naked, we want to cover ourselves. Say, how do you know? Who told you you were nude? The I amness inside is asking the reason and the feeling, how do you know you are nude? How do you know? Who told you? How can two pair of forces be exposed or be totally devoid of a clothing? He says, the woman thou hast given me, and this is the excuse we make, passing the buck. We always try to find some reason. You see, Adam, we have to find some reason for our shortcomings, so we pass the buck onto somebody. The woman thou hast given me has given me the fruit to eat. Well, the poor woman is now the blunt of the excuse, when in reality, the Creator was very happy that both of them experimented. You see, he put a dare, and it's only because he put a dare within the mechanism creation can continue, or else creation will be sterile. I dare you not to eat of the fruit in the midst of the garden, knowing fully well you got to eat it in order to carry on my creation. God is a master psychologist. It takes the negative to make positive. Because if it was nothing for you to do, In the first place, Adam and Eve would do nothing. They can't continue begetting. So that's kind of boring in this situation as to what they're going to beget. It's the daring situation. The daring to find out what is the tree of knowledge. And it's by the astral projection from the solar plexus they went out. Now this again is not going by the door. By any other method is like a thief. Now the Lord, or the I Am beingness in man, realized if they did this particular action of experimenting in the lower realm, the real brain where the tree of life is now, they will suddenly eat of that or learn its mechanics, and then they would be immortal without making the journey by natural law of love or ethics. So he placed a cherubim and a seraphim on either side at the gate towards the east. So right here, the gate of the east, you have two lobes, the Arashina center. It has two petals, a seraphim and a cherubim. It means it has a posterior and an anterior function. There now it blocks, by the use of the will, any attempt on the five senses through reason, logic, or feeling in a low emotional tone to get past that center there and go back to the inner centers of the brain and tap the nectar that flows from the tree of life. So the first experience that a man or a woman has when they try to look in through the door or the gate towards the east is that he runs into a blaring light. This light, a jyoti, blocks him. That's like a burning bush. It's the light of Bindu, that's the light to keep you out. It's the very first contact with the Lord. That keeps you out, because if you're not ethical enough, it doesn't let you pass through. Now, onto the sun means onto the intuitively developed being, which is a master consciousness, is giving the key to open it by initiation, to redeem you from your mistake, so that you can pass through in. Now, Cain and Abel, these are two forces in this mechanism. Humility and egoism. These are the two forces locked up in men, which are the offsprings of reason, logic, and feeling. Adam is logic and reason. Feeling. Eve is feeling. Therefore, they have an offspring called now ego. His name is Cain. And in counterbalance, because ego is greater than humility, as it's called a child of God. God is a superego. Didn't know that, eh? Yes, we see Cain was called a child of God, the superego. God is the superego, and the lower ego is Cain. So Abel is humility. That is something that grovels in the dirt. So Abel was someone who found to be of a lower nature, that had to be bowed down in activity. Now these two forces are working inside. Ego will always try to destroy humility. It'll always try to make a footmat out of humility. Any person who is humble and doesn't try to stand up and act in a passive way, you'll always find an egotistical person trying to take advantage of them. Because they do not like to see passive, humble people. So the egotist will always try to bang their heads in or smash it in.
So Cain is ego, and Abel is humility. Now Abel is struck out by the ego. And once it's struck out by the ego, now the human body takes on its particular dominant tendency. The dominant tendency of the male will appear because ego has struck out humility. And the dominant tendency of the female may appear because Cain has struck out, or ego has struck out humility out of it. So when a male or a female appear as two distinct forms, ego is the primary cause to give them their distinctness. The male ego and the female ego gives their distinctness in form and sets them apart. Now this is what the psychiatrist is trying to tell you. You must hold on to your ego, inflate it up, pump it up like a balloon, because it's all you got. The saints don't tell you that, because the ego tries to fool itself by lulling the senses to sleep, to experience pleasure. That's what Cain knew his wife in the land of Nod. And to know someone, as we say, this is, you can't know them intellectually. If you use the word know to mean sexual, that is to indulge in pleasure. So the ego in man or woman dulls the senses, which puts it in the form of sensory suspension to heighten or stimulate the feeling of pleasure. And the pleasure comes on in that state. So the individual begins to realize that his ego, that part of his nature that is dominating him, is marked once his humility has gone out of him. Now it says that when Cain killed Abel, the Lord says, "Vengeance is mine, no one kill Cain." Well, naturally, Adam is reason, Eve is feeling, Abel is humility, Cain is ego. Which other force is dominant in the body now that can destroy ego? Greed can do it, anger can do it. If they try, they have a right, but they dare not raise their hand. Lust dare not raise their hand. Neither love. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will deal with him. I, the I am, will deal with ego. Because I am that I am, and the ego is only an I am, and it's not the I am I am. He's got to learn who is the real I am, and he's going to deal with him and show him who is the big I am in this whole shebang. So this is where the ego has learned, has come to learn his lesson. I will deal with him. No one lay on, not even will. Not means the Christ. Not even the Christ can lay a hand. That's the will. Because will must submerge to my will. Even the Christ has to say, thy will be done. The I am that I am's will must be done. The Satpurush, the God self. So even the Christ in itself cannot chastise. But it is said, the Lord has given the power unto the Son to perform the action. That means the will is empowered as a force within the body to make correction over all the dominant failures
of this mechanism, most of all over ego, which is kin, because ego kills. Ego is self-destructive, and only will, as a dominant force, can put it back in its place. But this permission to put it back in place must come from the I Am self. That's why unto the Son is given that power. With the permission of the I Am, the will can then correct ego. But until that time, the will cannot even take upon itself to chastise or correct ego.
Does that mean that you cannot come to God's realization through humility?
Wait a minute. Humility was killed by ego. How is it going to atone? How is come back? We will come to God by humility. Remember this. God accepted the sacrifice of humility over the sacrifice of ego. Cain is ego. Abel is humility. And Abel's sacrifice was accepted. It doesn't say that man does not come to God by humility. And not, your ego can knock out your humility. When it knocks it out, it finds out that is not the way to come to God by ego. You must come by the way of humility to God. But because ego has already done the damage of taking upon itself to dominate the lower functions of the body and assert its superiority over humility, will could not take upon itself and correct it. Because will is the next dominant force. Anger, lust, greed are not dominant forces over ego. You see? Will is a dominant force over ego. But he could not do it upon itself. Therefore, it had to call upon the I Amness. The I Amness has to come and say, no one lay a hand in this whole hierarchy. No one of these functions there take upon themselves the law into their hands to punish ego. I alone will punish ego. And he branded it. They said the mark of Cain was placed upon him, a part to sort him out, so that the ego nature would be now be recognized as a force to be dealt with from the I Amness. But the will was then given the power by the I Amness to redeem the ego. By redeeming the ego would have to suffer the very same punishment which he administered to the brother humility. He would be forced to come into the position of humility to be redeemed by will, because will is a dominant force, and if will takes upon itself to be the ego force, backed up now by the I Amness behind it, what power has ego got but to become humble? He's put in the same role, he's put to walk in the shoes of humility by will backed up by I Amness. But before that, if will was to take upon it the power into his own hand, or take the law into his own hand and try to chastise ego, then will is a worse off than ego is. That's why the I Amness says, no one, not even will, that's the Christ self, dare not do it. I alone will do it. And I give the will the power. Now he gives the will, he has to pass this mantle, this force, this transference. It's only when the will is in alliance with the divine, then chastisement of the ego is a genuine punishment, a genuine correction. Therefore, the ego will now learn true humility. Until that time, it could not learn it. Willpower will try to imitate ego. Therefore, the will will always say, thy will be done, but thy will is my will in action. So the two are one for the first time, bringing ego down to its knees, and thus making an egoless individual which is a very, very humble individual, but of the highest caliber. So once the ego is reduced to its true humility, then its way back to God is guaranteed. Do you see it now?
That's why people, after they first find Christ, so they have a spiritual explosion, psychological explosion, isn't it?
All right. Their ego is suddenly squelched. The Cain in them has suddenly turned around to become Abel, because they have been exposed to will allied with the I Amness, which is the Christ, allied with God. Their own inner nature has now been transmuted. Now they are brought into the garden to feast with that divine quality. They partake of that new life. So Jesus says, if I be lifted up, I draw all other men to me. If the will be aligned with the I Amness, then ego, lust, greed, humility, and all these different forces will be all be transmuted and changed. Then we have a new being for the first time. So your Garden of Eden is the spiritual psychology and behavior of men. And as you understand it, you begin to see now that the tree of life is up in the head, the real brain. And the pseudo brain is the solar plexus. So the land of Nod, remember, it's sleep, sensory shutdown, which has to do with the ego. Ego goes into a form of sleep like hypnosis to seek pleasure. Now, you want to see how your mind tries to be pleasurable. What is the basic gestures of pleasure? The basic gesture of pleasure, you have to pull yourself in. If you smell something, don't you tend to go into a reverie state? Something in the similar to sleep. That means you want to shut out everything and go into a state of sleep to really experience the depth of it. So when you're thinking deeply, you're having a form of union, and you're having a form of pleasure, rebel sensation. So the ego gets its highest pleasurable sensation in a pseudo form of sleep, nod. Like if all the senses are now starting to heighten themselves by closing in.
It's so interesting. I've experienced that kind of pleasure in
But that pleasure is not but it's not something bad. Don't go knocking it. It's just because that's the mechanics of it.
You want to get rid of that then, don't you?
You want to understand it to use it differently. You don't want to use your ego to gain pleasure through sensory suspension. You want the ego to gain joy by transcending sensory suspension. That's what meditation becomes now. One is joy and one is pleasure. Sensory pleasure, the ego can go into it and quiver. Joy is that transcendency where there are no guilt complexes, where there are no sensations of self-deterioration. So, by focusing at the point between the eyebrows, which is another form of nodding, but there's a big difference between this type of nodding and the sensual nodding. Sensual nodding, or sensual sleep, eventually ends up asleep. Meditation is a conscious nodding, that which you put yourself in a conscious position to merge with the joy that will come to the body from the sensory nature after 8 hours of sleep. The same pleasure that will come to the body, the same sensation of recharging that will come to the body after 8 hours of sleep by pleasurable shutdown in a state of nodding in a non-conscious way, this sensation now is heightened and rejuvenating and can come about in about 10 minutes, 5 minutes. That's why Jesus says, none come unto the Father but by me, and come unto me all ye that travail and are heavy laden, and I will refresh you. We must go now by the true door to shut down the effect of the ego over ourselves and revitalize ourselves with the divine will allied with the I amness in ourselves. Then we truly have not pleasure from the sensory nature in the form of pseudo sleep, but we have now true joy, true revitalization of the body by conscious suspension brought on by meditation. Therefore, the saint eventually lives in a fatigueless state. He doesn't care for sleep no more. Sleep is nodding, like Cain going into the land of Nod and knowing his wife, knowing pleasure, knowing his negative force field or his female force field, the pleasurable sensation of shutting down. Whereas now, the ego is not doing that no more. It's aligning itself with will. You see? And then becoming joyful. In your solar plexus, in the pit of your stomach, they say, I know something in the pit of my stomach. That is a pseudo-knowing. It's not a real knowing.
So it's not intuition.
It's not intuition.
You can meditate though for a long time where things are going on, you're expecting in your mind that you know that things are going on, but they're going on and you don't know. Right?
Yes. Right. When you know there's a different feeling, at the solar plexus there is a feeling, and slightly above the solar plexus, which is intuitive now, there's a goose pimple sensation that crawls up your spine and raise the hairs of your neck. And then you have your intuition. Have you had that type of experience now?
Yes.
Well, that's your... All right. That is your intuition now. That is knowing independent of the senses. That's what they call your feathers are being ruffled. You see, psychologists will say that you don't have intuition. You have ruffled feathers. But that's the energy going up now the spine in a, like a goose pimple sensation. And it triggers all the head area. What is really happening, the kundalini or the coiled up life energy is raised up for the first time from the base of the spine like a cold sensation rising up through the body. It's the movement of the audible life current right up through the spine, right through the chakras without interfering them. Enlivening them, or what you say, vitalizing them, so that as it passes through the spine, the sense of trust, sense of conviction, sense of service, sense of commitment, these are the functions of the chakras. These are the true functions of the fact, the chakras, not the psychic forces. The true functions of the chakras are the etic nature. When the etic nature is opened up in the chakra, that these functions now become predominant And from that heightened state of bliss, or heightened state of gooseful sensation, where we tingle all over, we begin to rely on these ethical qualities, and we have formed now the true character of the nature of man. It's projected out now. There are 9, but we only are familiar with 7, because these are the 7 that predominate. The other 2 are subtle ones that we don't have much use of, except when we're in the astral realm, then they become active. The sense of service is governed by the heart. The pure in heart see God, and God is devotional service in action, seva. Now, S-A-V-I-O-U-R too. It's not just S-E-V-A, which is service. Just a real savior or messiah renders the cosmic service by being God in the flesh among men. That's why he's called Emmanuel, God among men. He is the divine service in action. He must take on the divine service and come down like the avatar. That's the divine service. He must come down as master in the flesh. It's God who takes on the word of seva, S-A-V-I-O-U-R now, and render seva, S-E-V-A, the divine service in action. And that's the heart chakra. Therefore, the bells are always tolling for the master. And the disciple, when he gets close to the master, he knows that he's on his way back home, beyond any doubt, as soon as he hears the bells. Until he doesn't hear the bells, he's still outside the perimeter of the vibratory nature of the lower senses. The moment he hears like a little clinking of the bell inside, then he's on his way back, because then he's no longer away from master's consciousness. The bell is the one you want to hear to tell you that you're... Now, when Walt Disney made his picture called Fantasia, he showed when the Angelus was ringing, when all the souls were going up at night to go away into the grimoire that lived up in the dark mountains of the night, lest they be all trapped by the grimoire before sunlight came, little Angelus began to ring, and they saw a heart and a door. Door of my heart, open wide, I keep for thee. You see, Yogananda sure screwed up his brain. Walt Disney was a disciple of Yogananda, see?